from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Judy Campbell, in for Dave Iverson. Nobody got shot, no cops, no sweat, not even no stress. 'Cause today I got day, because today was blessed. A decade ago, when social worker Tomas Alvarez was working as a school counselor at Berkeley High, he assumed that as a man of color, he would have more success than the other counselors, mostly white and female, in reaching African-American male students struggling with truancy, violence, and other problems. But he found they weren't any more interested in talking to him than the others. This experience led him to found the Oakland-based nonprofit Beats, Rhymes, and Life, which uses rap and hip-hop as a form of therapy. We'll talk to the program's co-founders and two participants. It's Hip-Hop Therapy on Forum after the news. From KQED Public Radio, good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell, in today for Dave Iverson. We hear a lot about problems faced by young African Americans in inner cities. In Oakland, which has already seen 76 murders this year, kids take to school with them the burden of living in areas hit by violence. Their friends or family members may have been victims, they may have been a witness, parents, neighbors, relatives may be locked up in prison, unable to participate much in a teenager's lives. The results can be a lot of trauma that can play out in a lot of harmful ways. It's something that educators and mental health professionals are eager to address, but often have a hard time figuring out ways to help. Many teenagers resist conventional therapy. They may not want to identify with having a mental health issue, or they may not want someone focusing on their problems for a whole hour. A nonprofit based in Oakland, Beats, Rhythm, Life, and Life is trying to bring mental health services to young people of color in a different way, through rap and hip-hop. In their after-school programs, a group of teenagers discuss the issues in their lives and community and turn it into lyrics and music that they'll eventually perform. Joining us to talk about hip-hop therapy is Tomas Alvarez III, founder and CEO of Beats, Rhymes, and Life. Welcome.
Thank you.
Also, Rob Jackson, co-founder and chief of staff of Beats, Rhymes, and Life.
Hi.
Hania Muhammad has been a participant in the program, is now an intern in the Beats, Rhymes, and Life Academy, a pipeline to get more people involved in this group and mental health services.
Hello.
Hi, and Demonte Wilson, also an intern at Beats, Rhymes, and Life Academy, and you were in the class, the Beats, Rhymes, and Life class, as a senior at Oakland High School in 2009. Yeah. Welcome to the show. Thank you all for joining us. Tomas Alvarez III, first, for you, this all began because you were noticing that you weren't able to reach some kids through your usual methods as a school counselor, and thought that maybe something they were already doing, making music, was a way for you to maybe help them shape that into something more therapeutic.
Absolutely. So while I was at Berkeley High School as a school social worker, I noticed that a lot of the youth there clearly identified with hip-hop culture. A lot of the young men of color that I was trying to engage in therapeutic services would often be in the hallways rapping, or at lunchtime in the quad rapping. And what I notice is, you know, and also what I know from my own experience is that hip hop has always been an outlet for expression for young people, and has always been an avenue for self-care for a lot of communities. And so rather than figure out how to force young people to adapt to the therapeutic frameworks and models that I was taught, I looked to how young people were already helping and healing themselves through hip hop, and really use that to develop a program, an alternative therapeutic model that we call hip hop therapy, to really honor what young people are doing, but also develop a program that would be palatable to their worldview and their life experiences.
Okay, so how were they using hip-hop? What was different about the way that they were doing hip-hop and doing it on their own, and what you were trying to do with them?
You know, so, I mean, hip-hop has always been, has created a platform for a lot of young people to have a voice and express themselves, to tell their story. The young men that, you know, young men, a lot of not just young men, young folks in general, I mean, they use it as a tool for expression. And I think that, you know, hip hop can be a powerful tool for telling one story, but also without, you know, specific support and guidance, it also could be a tool for perpetuating a lot of the negative stereotypes and messages that do not serve young people or communities. And so
the kind of things that people complain about in hip hop, right? Violence,
right.
Drugs, misogyny.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Correct. So you know, I saw an opportunity, you know, and I think that this opportunity is one that exists in a lot of communities and a lot of cities throughout the country. In a lot of schools where, you know, young people are already gravitating toward this cultural expression and with the right support could really use it to not only reflect on their own experiences, share their story, but really as a platform for bringing attention to the issues that are important to them, the issues that are impacting their well-being, their wellness, their success.
Now, you talk about this as a strength based approach. I wonder if you could talk some about that, about some of the traditional mental health interventions have to do with talking to people about their problems and pathology.
Sure. You know, our mental health industry is inherently pathology based, meaning that oftentimes in order for an individual to access service, you have to be given a mental health diagnosis, a mental disorder. And so when you have a system that is inherently deficit-based or pathology-based, it becomes very hard as a provider within that system to establish a relationship with an individual that really centers around their strengths and their assets. You know, oftentimes we focus on the individuals and the problems within the individual that need to be fixed, but and we often ignore what that person is doing well, or how they've their level of resilience, or how they've overcome things, adversity in the past, and in doing that we miss a huge opportunity to really form a relationship that and do the work that really centers around their strengths and their assets and what they bring, and also the strengths of the community as well. We often focus on what are the problems in the community, and we ignore what are the positive things that are happening within the community.
So Rob Jackson, co-founder, chief of staff of Beats, Rhythms, and Life. Tell me what this looks like in the classroom, in the groups. I guess some of these are after school programs you're doing at various places, right? How does the program work?
Yeah, well, we discussed the notion of it being strength-based already. We focus on a youth-centered approach, culturally relevant, culturally responsive approach. And essentially what it is a 20-week program where we walk them through the history of hip-hop, just because we feel like if they have an understanding of where this art came from, and what it was used as, like originally what the platform was used and what the intention was for, then they will be more exposed to, like, understanding how they themselves can use it as a voice and a platform for their own disparities, their own oppression.
So part of what you're doing is kind of teaching a little hip-hop history, right? You're talking about kind of what it was when it started.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about that and the importance of that.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, like, you know, hip-hop started over 30, almost 40 years ago now, and it was really a way for oppressed youth in disenfranchised communities to have a voice to speak and empower themselves to speak against the oppression and just kind of speak to some of the social conditions that they were facing in their neighborhoods. And now, you know, fast forward to today and how it how we like intertwine it in our program is basically just making like the past relevant and connected to what their experience is now. And you know, hip hop is kind of steered away from the idea of like speaking against the oppression to, as Tomas said earlier, perpetuating it. And so we want to like kind of steer it back in the trajectory of like really speaking against some of the ills that we face in our society.
Nia and Demonte, you guys are both working in classrooms now. Is that right? You're helping the kids. Now, I want to play a clip of you. There have been several albums that the group that you all have put out of songs that have been developed. These are songs that have been developed in a classroom. This one is called Seen a Lot of Things.
I done seen a lot of things. I done heard a lot of things. I done felt a lot of things. I've been through a lot of things. I still love a lot of things. Both shots, I scream, stop the blood dripping. Dodging bullets like the Matrix. I was taught not to be slipping. Now I'm tripping. My uncle, cousin, baby, partner got shot. Right in front of my eyes, talking about sick, then I am finna pop. Like a balloon, I'm filled with anger. Felt my heart drop. Down to my stomach, out my anal. Blame it on the cops. Now I'm loveless. I'm focused on my focus. Education, get that money. That is one way to get justice. Brutal beating and mistreating. I show nothing but disgust, man. Is this enough said? I make tears shed.
All right, Nia Muhammad, that's you we're hearing here, huh?
Yeah,
you sound
me.
Great. All right, tell me about that. Tell me about writing those lyrics. Was this as a process of this the class that you were in?
Actually, that song wasn't really a part. I had brought that song to the class, and like they said, we can bring like our personal music to it and like choose someone from the group to be on the song. So I brought that song into it and chose Demonte to be on the song.
Well, talk a little bit about, in light of what these two were talking about the process of this. What does it do for you? I mean, you're telling some personal stories about your life there and what you see, right?
Yeah.
What does that do for you? Talk about that process.
Well, it helps me like get it off my chest, get things off my chest, because I was going through a lot back then, and I was just seeing a lot of things in Oakland and kind of tired of it. So I just decided to write a song about a few things I saw. And
what
yeah.
sort of stuff? You want to talk more about that? What kind of stuff?
Well, when I was writing that song, I was writing inside of a studio down the street from my house. And like I've seen people get shot in that same apartment where I was writing the studio, where I was writing the song at. And yeah, that's one of the things I've seen. And basically, just a whole bunch of, like, stuff with the cops I've seen and went through. And that I had to add that inside the song.
Right. And you find it's kind of cathartic? I mean, you're talking about it's a release for you to talk about it? Does it help you kind of understand it?
Yeah, it just helps me know that, like, what I've been through and what I've seen, like, can make me a stronger person, and just sharing it with somebody else or for the world or whatever to hear, it can help them in a way, like know that like you've seen a lot of things, but like there's still stuff to love, like bad things, and there's still good things to love.
Right. And when you're developing, I guess you came in with the song, but a lot of what you all do in the group is you're doing this together, right? So people are talking about you're sharing the things that you've seen and your the way you look at it and your perceptions of it. And then out of that, kind of, you create your lyrics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Demonte Wilson, I know you've talked about when you're doing this, especially now that you're working in classrooms with kids too, in this process, what is it you're looking for? Like, what do you want them to be bringing when they bring their lyrics? What do you want to see from them, and what do you want to bring?
For me, I just want to see them be able to do it. Like, it's just that simple. Like, I don't really care about them knocking out a whole person and just them having the confidence to be able to do it and to know that that we're here to listen and help. And, yeah.
I wonder so much, a lot of times when people think about, especially people think about big rappers, the images of a lot of narcissism, a lot of fronting, a lot of people putting on kind of characters that maybe aren't real honest, you know, it's about money and it's about the ladies. And and I wonder when kids are kind of doing, when people kind of start playing with this music form, is that where they go? I mean, is it hard to get people to kind of tell the stories that are kind of honest stories about themselves?
Yeah, a lot of the kids come in with that type of mindset because, like, that's all they see on TV and on the radio. So it's like, yeah, a lot of them come in with that type of headspace where they feel like they 2 Chainz or Lil Wayne or not. But, like, when we explain to them, like, the history of where hip-hop came from and, like, give them, like, just an understanding of hip-hop and, you know, and being curious and asking them questions of why they said this word and why they said that, then, you know, it kind of make them think about, like, what they do. And, like, some of the kids, it's kind of hard for them to, like, to transition to, like, the way we write our music. But, like, it's, you know, we there with them every step of the way. So it's like, we there with them every step of the way. So it's like, we teach them. It's not that hard. Some of the kids, like, they don't want to. It's like a pride thing, like an ego thing. So they don't want to bring their real self out to people who they don't know.
And that's like, all. They don't want to expose things that they might be embarrassed of.
And that's all it be. Like, most people have, like, their pride be in the way. So, like, they don't want to really tell people who they really are.
Well, that's got to be a hard thing. I mean, so how do you get beyond that? Is it just the process of working on music?
Or? Conversations and talking about it in group. And just conversations that we have in group. And everybody tell their story, which makes it easier for somebody else to tell their story. So, like, if I told something about me, it may make somebody in the group want to open up because they feel like they're not alone. So, yeah.
So talk about things that you, as you've participated in this, what are some things that you have talked about, worked on as you've been in this group and some other people? What are some of the things that have come up?
Like, as far as what? Like,
as the issues, that's the things that people in their lives dealing with or
I mean, like stuff. About. Basic things that we always go through, like people dealing with, like families not being there, people dealing with death in the family, death, friends dying, people getting shot at, people being shot, drugs, violence, all this basic stuff that we've been going through for years.
And I know, so I should mention that there is a movie based on, a documentary has been done based on the work that you do and the class that you were a part of at Oakland High. It's called A Lovely Day. It's going to air on KQED at 6 p.m. on October 13th. And there's a scene in that movie where you and your cousin were talking about the music that your cousin does and that your cousin had been through a lot of trauma, and the two of you you have a different approach to songs. I wonder if you could talk about that. Like, what does he write about? What do you write about?
My cousin Reg, he ever since he started rapping, like, he's been dealing with a lot of things in his life. So, like, he likes to, like, talk about, like the pain that he go through and the pain that, like, most people go through. As far as me, I like to focus on, like, uplifting my community, because I feel like even though we in our down times and even though things are bad, that you can always see the light in the dark. So yeah, I'll try to focus on that.
Let's hear this is called Knock You Down. Another
habitually tested, mentally molested, in the handcuffs, feeling socially arrested, shots off the bedstead, constantly messed with, every word's got my heart feeling so congested, loving, understanding is all I'm requesting, some people take it as a bad suggestion, try to restrain myself, but I'm just wrestling, my enemy is what I'm dissecting, got my swag back, yo, call that resurrection, just trying to view things at my own perspective, trying to share feelings, but I'm too selective. Girls at school don't understand my affection. Too many mistakes got my brain corrected. Me and dignity will remain connected. Will remain connected. Me and dignity will remain connected.
Tomas Alvarez III, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the use of hip-hop here, because it's more than, I think there are a lot of therapeutic models that are using people telling their stories and are trying to get people to get a new perspective on their stories. What's the wholeness? What else does hip-hop bring to this?
It just brings so much. I mean, you know, we can sit here and talk for hours about really the depth and application of hip-hop. You know, the mental health and health fields have been searching for decades now for an integrative approach and tool for promoting wellness and well-being. And that's hip-hop, you know, and it's something, you know, I say that hip-hop is a community-defined strategy to wellness, and it's allowed communities to not only have an outlet, an emotional outlet, but it's been a platform for building community, for fostering health. You know, you look at the different elements of hip hop and you see breakdance. Well, that's promoting physical health and also healthy competition through physical activity. And so, you know, within hip hop, you can look at whatever element or form of expression, whether it's rapping or DJing or graffiti. And within it, you can kind of break down, like, what are the youth development, you know, kind of applications of that, the social justice applications, the health application. And really what we see is that hip hop culture is a phenomenal tool. And it's a, the biggest, you know, and it was a tool that was created by youth and young adults, but in service of their development and their well-being and their healing and also their empowerment, you know. And so, you know, it just provides a tremendous platform for young people to transcend conditions, to build power, to promote well-being.
Mm-hmm. Now, Nia Muhammad, when you hear this, I mean, when you entered into this program, did you see it as kind of a mental health thing? Did you see it as a way to do hip hop?
Yeah, I seen it as just a hip hop program, like Tomas, because I was at Berkeley High or Berkeley Tech, and he was telling me like all about mental health, and like I didn't know that much about it, so I really wasn't understanding him then. But like I just thought of it as a program, and I didn't really know like the curriculum they had was like to really get us to share our stories and to heal us. So when I first was going, I just hip hop class.
Was there? Did it take a change of my? I mean, was it a kind of awkward thing to come to that point where you were sharing and talking about it in that way?
Not really.
Uh huh.
Like, it took me a while. Like, even when the program ended, I still didn't know that it was really like therapy. For us, like, it took me to being able to be a part of the program and see like the behind the scene work and how they put the curriculum together to prepare for the youth, for us. Like, that's what made me really understand that it was therapy.
And when you look in retrospect, when you kind of look back at what happened with it, do you see that
yeah, it looking did that back for you? Uh-huh. And watching the movie, just seeing how like I shared, and there was events that happened right then and there.
Talk a little bit about that. What were you going through?
I went to jail.
Yeah.
That was one thing. And I was on ankle monitor, had a lot of, like, issues, like, just from, like, being locked up for unfair reason. And I was just angry behind that, and just being able to have them come to my house with the music studio, still being able to record. And that's just, it just was therapy, still being able to have people around me, even though I was in a bad predicament, still was on ankle monitor. And it just healed me from, because like, I just was going through a lot, and just having people to talk to, just that right there, it was like therapy.
We'll continue our conversation about hip-hop therapy after a short break. We want to hear from you. Join us with your thoughts on the healing powers of hip-hop or about the therapeutic value of shaping your story into art. If you'd like to join the discussion, call us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on your website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Judy Campbell, sitting in for Dave Iverson, and you're listening to KQED Public Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Judy Campbell in for Dave Iverson. We're talking with the founders and participants in Beats Rhythm Life, an Oakland-based nonprofit that's using rap music and hip-hop to bring mental health services to young people who may be resistant to conventional therapy. We're joined by Tomas Alvarez III, founder and CEO of Beats Rhymes and Life, Rob Jackson, co-founder, Nia Muhammad, who is an intern at Beats Rhymes and Life Academy, and Demond Belmonte. Wilson, also an intern at Beats Rhymes and Life Academy. Rob Jackson, I wonder if you can talk about a big part of your program is about kind of changing people's perceptions. There's a lot of people have a lot of ideas about what the young people that you're working with are like, what their lives are like, what their experience is like. And part of what you're doing is getting people to make their own judgments about what their life is like.
Yeah, we practice what is called the corrective emotional experience. And essentially what that is allowing the youth the opportunity to take a look at their narratives, take a look at the perspectives that they've gained, take a look at the behaviors that have kind of formulated from those perspectives, but also not just their own perspectives, but what other people think of them. And essentially what we're trying to do is by taking that really introspective look at their lives, and then empowering them in a way of having them look at it from a resilient perspective, and from, as we said earlier, a strength-based perspective. Oftentimes what they find and what we find is we deliver that corrective emotional experience around like what they see as their narratives. And then it becomes a tool for self-esteem. And as we said, resiliency. And they start to believe in like who they are and the characters they become, and start to see themselves as not deficient and not, you know, somebody that's less than, but actually somebody that is really strong and really just capable.
And do you see the process of writing lyrics as part of that? Is it kind of you coming up with your story and saying who you are and how you see the world?
Yeah, I mean, writing the lyrics is a big part of it. Like it the discovery comes in the discussion, and then the what we really try to do is create a supportive environment where everybody feels safe, and we use what's called agreements to do that. And once we've established those relationships with the youth, then the transformation comes in the discussions that we have and gaining the new perspectives around their lives. And then the exploration comes in writing it and the cathartic experience and just kind of it's the beginning of retelling their narratives and retelling their story from a strength-based perspective.
DeMonte and Nia, it's a powerful thing. I mean, especially starting this, you guys both came into this program already performing your own music, right?
Yeah.
To be a teenager and to say, especially in a medium like this in hip hop, I mean, it's a powerful one where you're giving your opinions and telling your stories. This is an age where people don't always have a voice. I wonder, Nia, can you talk about the role that plays? Was that a hard thing for you to find? You have a musical background, right? Your parents were both involved in music.
Yeah.
But is it a hard thing for a kid that age to kind of get up and say, this is who I am and I'm going to tell you about myself and my community?
I mean, I think it depends on, like, the person, like, you are. Because, like, if you was already, like, confident and have a background in music and stuff like that, then I feel like, then it wouldn't be hard to do that. But like while working in the groups now, like seeing the young teens in it that's in high school, like they that doesn't really have a musical background, it's kind of hard for them mm-hmm. to do that. That's why I'm here to help them, but it wasn't hard for me to do that.
Tell me what it's like. So you're going into classrooms now and you're helping them with the music part. You're helping with the whole program?
Yeah, I'm helping with the whole program. Like I do the check-ins and agreements, like get the group started or whatever. And then, like, if the facilitators need help with any activities, I will help with that. Or, like, I have led a few activities on my own. Like, so I got, like, facilitating skills and therapy skills just naturally.
One thing that Nia is really speaking to is what we really believe in is the shared leadership model.
This is Rob Jackson. Yeah,
and the Academy was specifically designed to create the pipeline into the helping professions and not just change the dynamic of who's serving our communities, but also just giving young folks like this the opportunity to really step up and show their leadership potential. And a lot of times they are, as Nia said, like leading the groups, leading the activities, making the connections, developing the relationships. and we're doing more of the training with them and working with them on the side, so they feel confident to be able to do that.
Right. And you did, Tomas Alvarez, I know that you, the third, you have mentioned that people of color don't necessarily go into these professions, and people are not seeing people in their communities there to help them that look like them.
That's correct. You know, my profession, the profession of social work in California, it's estimated about 72% of licensed clinical social workers are white women. Now, that's not to say that white women can't be helpful to communities of color, especially diverse youth communities of color. But it does point to the fact that there is a lack of workforce diversity within the workforce. And that does contribute to certain barriers that really discourage a lot of youth of color from accessing services because they cannot not identify with the providers who are offering those services. And as Rob mentioned, you know, the fact that in Beats, Rhymes, and Life, we partner with young people to deliver our programs is a shift within the mental health paradigm, which traditionally, you know, you have the expert, you know, you have the therapist, the clinician, which is the expert providing the treatment. It's a very top-down approach. So in BRL, we really believe in, you know, building the community's capacity to help and heal itself. And to do that, we have to invest in young people as leaders, as healers, really training the social work skills as Nia mentioned, but really creating the space for them to, as Rob said, co-lead. And what we've seen is that actually our programs have improved. They've gotten better. They've gotten more rich, more dynamic. The young people in the program that we serve actually identify with our interns more so than they identify with the adult staff. And so our young people become bridges. They become brokers. They become, you know, mental health navigators for the youth that we serve. And they play a central role in actually us engaging young people in schools, youth centers, and in the community.
Demonte Wilson, this is, you are now interested in entering this field, right? You have is this something that you knew that you wanted to do?
No. Before I was in BRL, I really didn't know what I wanted to do except like be a like famous rapper.
Yeah, right. And now are you in social work? You're studying?
I'm going to school. I'm finna go attend back to Laney College and try to focus on my major and being a social worker. So like the job has helped me figure out like what I want to do and what I'm interested in doing.
Yeah. I want to play a clip from the movie. There's this movie. It's called A Lovely Day. It's part of a Truly California series on KQED Radio. It's KQED TV. It's going to air on October 13th at 6 p.m. And we have a clip from the movie, and this is with you, Nia, and it is showing this experience of you are all doing music together, and you are critiquing people's lyrics. And let's listen.
We got one female in our crew, right? I want to hear the female impression of that song. Was it respectful? Was it offensive? How do you think women are going to receive this song?
Matt.
Okay, let's be honest.
It was like, it's not really gonna help the women's society, and like it's really just feeding them negative game. You feel me? And, yeah.
That's the way I express myself. Like I can't help it. Sorry.
Nia brought up a really good point, right? She was talking about Matt's content, right, and what he was saying, and it's something for all of us to think about. Each one of you guys who do a verse represent the whole group.
When you write your raps, think about how you're gonna elevate not only your community and your people, but the sisters that's with you, because like these are the queens that hold us down.
That was a clip from A Lovely Day, a film about Beats, Rhymes, and Life. And in that clip, we heard three of our guests here, Rob Jackson and Tomas Alvarez. We're talking with Nia Muhammad. And you were the only woman, the only female there. And in talking about kind of as the person talking about the personal effects of the messages that come out in a lot of music and the way it hits women. Talk about that. Your role there and your role in maybe checking kind of what some things that men are saying in this music.
Yeah. My role there when I in the group, like being the only female, it just made me want to go harder and just be more positive and be a real leader for women, because on the mainstream it's just a whole bunch of negative stuff. They're half naked and things that I don't agree with. So just me being there, being the only female, I just made it, like, I just had to keep coming just so I can influence, like, other females to be a part of it and just know that you could just be yourself. You don't have to sell out or do what other people want you to do just to be big or to be a leader.
Do you get pushback from the other classmates on that? On when you're talking about something, being misogynistic or the way people are talking about women?
Nah, I didn't get pushed back. It's like they respected me more. And like the scene you just played, Matt, he would say like today, like that scene like changed his life. Like he don't rap, like use misogyny in his raps anymore. He speak highly of women. Like he uplift women in his music now, like after that scene. So
that's an argument for more women to be in hip hop, I guess. For
yeah.
You. Yeah. And so you are trying to have a different. You talked about you don't agree with these things, being half naked on stage. What do you see your image?
Yeah, my image is just like dressing regular. I just like not trying to show, like be all revealing of your body, because like that's private, really. But it's just like real regular. I don't know how to explain it, but people say I'm kind of like boyish, if you want to call it, because I'm always covered up and just being myself. So I don't know exactly to explain it.
Let's take a call. Hillary is calling from Oakland. Welcome, Hillary.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can. Go ahead. Join us.
Hi. Well, first of all, I just want to say this program sounds absolutely fantastic. I was born and raised in Oakland, and I just had one comment. Basically, I went to Oakland public schools at a time when we had music education in the schools, and when I really think that kids who are listening to hip hop also need to listen to other music, and there are so many resources that are available online that I would love to see on your website. For example, the San Francisco Symphony has a fantastic educational website. Yale Open Courses has an entire free course on the history of music, and there's also a course on the history of the African-American experience from Reconstruction to the present. There are NPR jazz profiles of jazz artists, and it would really be nice to see kids get this education.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Hillary. I wonder, DeMonte Wilson, let's have you respond to this first. How much you listen to other kinds of music? Is hip-hop your full experience?
Yeah. I mean, I really don't listen to too much other music other than like R&B and hip-hop. That's what I'm interested in. I mean, I've tried to, expand my horizons, but... I'm more interested in hip hop. It connects with me more than other music.
Yeah, how about you, Nia?
Yeah, I mainly connect with hip hop. Maybe a little reggae or something, Bob Marley. But I don't know, like the classical. Like it eases my mind when I listen to the music, but it don't like do that much for me as hip-hop do for me.
Right. Now, Tamaz, what Hillary was talking about was a lot of different kinds of music, but also things, a longer history of African-American music.
Sure.
Do you think about that, and is there something, I mean, you are finding something unique in hip-hop that you're trying to use to connect to kids? How do you think about, you know, kind of broader musical things you'd like to bring in?
Sure. You know, I think Nia and Damonte really emphasize the point, you know, that if you ask a lot of young people what they're listening to, it's hip hop. And so, you know, we believe in taking, you know, a youth-centered approach, which means we're going to meet young people where they're at. And if where they're at is hip hop, then that's where we begin. That's not where we end. It's where we begin. And, you know, I'm sure if you had DJs from the Bay Area, which I'm sure listen to the show, call in, they will actually testify that hip hop for a lot of people created you know, really the pathway to other music. I mean, hip hop, you know, is a fusion of jazz, blues, a bunch of other, you know, musical forms, and really sampled a lot of different music and created a new music. And so within hip hop, you have a lineage, you know, that it, and it draws from different influences and inspirations. And for a lot of people who have, you know, dug, you know, looked into the research of where these samples come from, a lot of them have taken an interest in blues, in jazz, in classical music. And some of, you know, the biggest artists that are around now, you know, will testify that they learned about other music through hip hop. So I agree with the caller that, you know, absolutely, you know, it would be wonderful to create additional access for young people, and especially in lieu of budget cuts and music programs being cut. You know, young people don't really have access, the same access, degree of access that they once had. But it's important that folks understand that hip hop is a culture that actually draws from other musical genres, and for a lot of urban youth has been the pathway to introducing them right to those artists.
Well, do you find that, Rob Jackson, when you're looking, because you talk about the history of hip hop and certainly a lot of hip hop has used different, there's a whole history of African-American music in the history of hip hop. Right. So are you introducing a lot, do you think, when you're doing that, or really expanding horizons?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some of the traditional forms of music that hip hop was derived from. I think we definitely infuse in our programming, whether it's introducing jazz through history of hip hop, or, you know, hip hop actually started as an alternative to kind of disco music, and the fact that it was so exclusive that people of our communities couldn't really share in that experience. So we created our own disco music. And, you know, I think, too, one thing that we really try to focus on, like, we partner with an organization called 5-1 Oakland, and it essentially is geared towards restoring music programs in the schools in Oakland. And so while that might not be our traditional modality, we're all for partnering with the individuals who are focused on that, and we appreciate the caller and the suggestions. Like Tomas said, it's our start game. It's not our end game.
All right, I'm going to play another song that you put that you produced. This is called "Be the Change." Now, who can set this up for me? Who can tell me about this song? Are you on this?
Yeah.
Okay. Nia Muhammad.
Yeah, that song. I think it came out like it was like a Gandhi quote, be the change that you want to be the change that you want to see. And we basically wrote in perspective of what we would like to see, what changes we would like to see.
All right, let's hear it.
Pray Obama do his thing to rearrange the U.S. nation. My people have been patient. Too many tears have been shed from frustration, discrimination, this segregation. See brutality on the TV, I hurry up and change the station. Caucasians been living here for decades. No police, jail cells, now they afraid. We realizing what they did, trying to play is just like an arcade. What I'ma do is just upgrade my life and community. Patch them up like a first aid. Take it to the top, taking my people so they won't fade. Sustain. If you want to be a leader like Obama,
want to be a leader like Obama, you got to make change. A lot of the music that you guys do has to do with community development. It has to do with just with Oakland, right? I mean, is that a big part? You want to talk about that, DeMonte Wilson? This is about kind of building community and participating in your community?
Yeah, we do focus on building up our community because, like, everybody know, like, Oakland is not known for, like, its positive vibes and, you know, the things that we do out here. So we like to try to push that in our music and push that to the youth that we work with in BRL because, like, every time I'm walking down the street, all I hear is, like, man, I hate Oakland. I'm going to move out of Oakland. And, like, I like to show people that it's, like, it's not our city. Sometimes it's the people in our city. And, like, you yourself can change. You feel me? You just got to be an example. You just got to be you got to show by example. And, yeah, so we try to push that to the youth that we work with into each other. Like, you know, that we big on being from Oakland and we love this city a lot.
So do you think Oakland gets an unfair rap then? Do you think people think of Oakland as, I don't know, more violent than it is or more troubled than it is?
I feel like people talk about the violence, but nothing really gets done. And I just feel like that's the main thing that's always talked about when Oakland comes up, like as far as like movies and like people talking about it on the radio. Just when people talk about Oakland, it's never really positive. So, like, we just trying to give it a new light.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, Muhammad.
Only, like, what's emphasized on the news, what's shown there is just somebody got shot or just something bad. But, like, they're not showing this program on the news how good we're, like, we're helping the kids and we're giving back and we're doing something positive. Like, I don't ever see nothing like that, like, about Oakland.
Right. I mean, another thing about Oakland is that there are a lot of people trying to do a lot of things in Oakland, right? That's there right. are a lot of programs. Right. There's a lot of youth programs. You have this kind of unique hip-hop therapy program. There are a lot of other mm-hmm. programs that are just getting people involved doing recording and hip-hop mm-hmm. And a lot of stuff. And I wonder how you think those programs, Tomas Alvarez, have done, I mean, not in the specific, but there has been a lot of attention on Oakland for a long time. Do you feel like the programming is happening in the right way? Is it missing a component? Is there something that this brings that others don't?
You know, I got to give Oakland and you know, youth providers and organizations that serve youth in Oakland a lot of credit and praise because folks have been holding it down for decades and they've been serving the community under-resourced, underfunded. I mean, you look at Oakland and per capita, there are probably more youth programs, youth organizations. There's so much innovation and the arts movement in Oakland is really huge and people deserve a lot of credit. And I think that folks are always, you know, those organizations that are really responding to the needs of the community are doing the best that they can. Mm-hmm. I think that oftentimes what happens with specifically youth development or arts education, you know, focused organizations is that if they're engaging young people from the community who have histories of trauma, then they're engaging with that trauma without the adequate support and resources to really do that in-depth healing, to really help facilitate that in-depth healing. And it can be very difficult and challenging. And there are a lot of health hazards, you know, just with mental health providers around burnout, around vicarious traumatization, you know, around, you know, not getting the proper support to really help young people heal and help the community heal. And so folks are doing an excellent job with what they have to work with. But I think, you know, folks, the other thing is that being a nonprofit, you also struggle to survive. And oftentimes you don't have the time to really collaborate and work together. And people often work in silos. And I think that that's not, you know, really, you know, a decision that people are wanting to make, but it ends up what is the case because folks are so busy trying to survive.
Howard from Sonoma, please join us.
Hey, how are you?
Great.
So I was listening to all this going on. I'm actually a teacher. I'm also a filmmaker.
And I also do very similar work to is done with the programs they have. But we have the events we have are called Understand Us events. Mm. And we work with a rapper in Oakland. And, in fact, a piece that was our most recent piece is called Nobody Knows Where the Bullet Goes. I don't know if the people in the studio have seen this one. It's been it was about the shootings in Oakland that have gone on and the random violence. And we had the head of the police there for our opening. And it's rap is an amazing, powerful delivery system. And we do it through a thing called character education in schools. And unfortunately, so much time is created just for academics that there's really not a lot of time during the school day for people and students to be able to come and have critical thinking conversations. And what we do is we create an opportunity for our original hip-hop videos to be seen live with the hip-hop artists and musicians, critical thinking conversations, and we actually get the high school students to spend about 3 or 4 days choreographing these dramatic little moments that correspond with going on the films. And so you see live action and live theater going on, live music, live performance, and we have these wonderful, great interactive conversations, and it kind of dovetails on what they're saying, where the people in the audience become teachers to students, and students become teachers, and that role is kind of blurred between teacher and student, and there's a great opportunity for, you know, enrichment that goes on.
All right. Thanks so much, Howard, from Sonoma. I appreciate your call. We'll move right on to Thea in San Francisco. Hi, Thea. Please join us.
Yeah, I think this is a great program you have going on in Oakland. I hope to see it expand. I would like to challenge your students to look at the history as well. Look at Miles Davis, Herbie Hancock, who's like the godfather of samples, and even Roger Troutman, the soul power from the 80s and early 90s. I mean, if you just want to look at your history, I challenge students, just listen to the Nas song, Blunt Ashes. It gives you the whole history of hip-hop. Listen to some of the music that he suggests. Make some live music and get the samples to make your own beat.
Thanks so much, Thea, for that recommendation. And we just have seconds left, but why don't we have you give recommendations to our listeners? What should they be listening to? People have asked you to listen to a lot of things. And just briefly, what do you want people to hear that they might not know? Give them a piece of hip-hop that they should listen to. Give them an artist. Anyone? Do you? Anybody here have a suggestion? Who would? What would make them understand your world a little more?
I listen to a lot of Kendrick Lamar and J. Cole right now. They kind of like the best right now. And Young Gully. Listen, if you want to listen to somebody that's in your community, Oakland, listen to Young Gully. He's speaking a lot about what's going on. He has an album.
All
right. Oscar Grant.
Okay, well, thank you all so much for joining us. We are out of time. You are listening to Forum. We've been talking about hip-hop therapy. I'm Judy Campbell, in today for Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.